Hey, welcome to Feldman World Review.
That's your world, I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Feldman World Review. I'm Brian Irving, your host here at Feldman World Review. Thanking you for tuning in and hoping you're hanging out. The chat room's going to be open in a second. I just got in here with my coffee. I barely ran in and just got here with the coffee, so I'm kind of jumping in. But I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Going on our ninth season here. I've had, had some steady following, and I really appreciate it a lot. That I do. But it is July the 2nd, 2020. It's a couple days away. 244 years ago, on July 4th, we chose liberty over tyranny. And it seems like this particular 4th of July, we're not going to be able to celebrate. They've shut it down. They claim it's because of COVID. I'm sure that they're more concerned about, if a whole bunch of July 4th celebrations went on, there'd be targets, right, for this the Marxist-Islamist coalition that's running around, burning things down, smashing things up, threatening people, shooting people, beating people. So, but in fact, there's a warning out that the BLM and the Crips gang members are stocking up on lethal fireworks that simulate gunfire. And they're going to be, having some kind of fun the way they have fun. And also, it was reported that Code Pink, of all people, they plan rallies in California on the 4th of July. And they're going to be doing that while the rest of the state is not allowed to hold family gatherings. We gave up a lot of personal rights, for all kinds of good reasons. We thought we were flattening the curve. We're trying to be civil-minded and fair, and we believe in equal justice under the law. And instead, we're getting force-fed. A lot of propaganda, a lot of Marxist-Islamist propaganda, and a lot of crap going on right now. But, a lot of us are going to miss this 4th of July. And, the one thing that they really took away from me that really hurts, because it's a thread throughout my entire life, my entire conscious life, from the time I was a little boy, is baseball. It basically took baseball away from me, And, they canceled the minor league baseball, which I'm a big fan. I love the game of baseball, regardless of, the superstars, I've been a baseball fan since I can remember. And, they've really damaged a lot of things in our culture, football, baseball, basketball, basketball championships, football, and even worse than the pros. These college kids that work their whole career, their whole life, to get into these situations to play, it was all taken away. And there's a lot of things being taken away in our culture, and we really need to stand up and fight. It's not really fair, and there's not a lot of fairness when it comes, especially to the left. But quite frankly, the putzes of the day, the July 2nd putzes of the day, and if any of them are listening, you got to take heed of this. The Republican leadership, for 3.5 years, they basically left Trump out there by himself to they just left him out to dry. In so many situations when they could have stood up for him, when they could have helped redirect the media, the message, and they didn't. They all wanted to distance themselves because, they're the established government. They're the establishment. These people from Mitch McConnell to Joe Biden that have been in for 30, 40 years, it became their careers. It was, civil service wasn't supposed to be a career choice. You were supposed to represent your constituency for a term, bring your constituency's concerns and votes to the Congress, and then you can went back home. But, you know, it's become a big career where they got, you know, they got a house in Washington, they got a house wherever they came from, they got a house in Europe, they got a house in Dubai, they, you know, they're all over the place. And, you know, I digress, but the Republican leadership, very disappointing. You know, we all know who they are, and they know who they are. And it's nice to see some of the young blood coming in, and the younger players, you know, from Tim Scott to Matt Gaetz to, you know, there's a youthfulness in it, and it's inspiring. It's very inspiring. There's a lot of women running here in Florida, conservative Republican women running in Florida here, but the leadership's terrible. They're just terrible. And they're letting these things happen to us. Now, Gavin Newsom, you know, our favorite governor of California, after Ronald Reagan, right, keeps his winery open for testing over the 4th of July weekend as he orders beaches, restaurants closed, and targets family gatherings. You know, their hypocrisy knows no bounds, and they just keep going on and on and on. You know, even though, you know, the 8 years of Obama, we know what we went through. You know, refanning race hate. You know, refanning race hate. And then there was this big story, right, about Russia paying Taliban to target U.S. soldiers. And did the president know? And he wasn't briefed, and he didn't know, and Pence didn't know, and somebody else knew. And, you know, it's going back and forth. And you know, obviously Schiff and Pelosi and Schumer are out there doing their demagoguery, you know, for the left, their demagoguery for the hate of Donald Trump. It really is Trump's arrangement system. You know, I used to think that was just a funny line, ha, ha, ha. But, you know, I'm starting to think these people are really infected. They must go to bed and wake up hating Trump. I know there's a lot of Twitter posters out there like that, but that's what they're doing. They just hate Trump. You know, so they went back and forth, and who knew what when, and blah, blah, blah. And then it turns out that Adam Schiff knew about this since February 2019, and he never shared the information with everybody. And then even better than that, Jim Hoff, the Gateway, reported that it was revealed that Russia had been paying the Taliban to kill U.S. soldiers since 2014 during the Obama years. Do you think when they were handing off power to Donald Trump the way it's supposed to be, you think they were, you know, that was one of the things that was in the list? You know, and he writes that Democrats in their liberal media, Never Trump rhinos and Liz Cheney, are very upset to hear Russia has been paying the Taliban to kill U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. You know, but they're not doing a very good job. There were 22 U.S. deaths in Afghanistan total in 2019, and there have been only 9 deaths in Afghanistan so far this year. Now, compare that to the 496 deaths in 2010 and the 412 deaths in 2011 under the Obama administration. You know, sometimes, as Hoff points out, facts matter. Now, the Taliban laughs at these latest reports. The new report at the Daily Beast, the Taliban admits Russia has been paying them for U.S. deaths for several years, going back to 2014. Now, Sami Yousafzai, Adam Rawsley, Christopher Dickey, and Aaron Banco at the Daily Beast wrote together that the Taliban veterans like to laugh about the first time, according to their lore, that the Russians dumped a lot of American dollars on them during the Taliban campaign to take over all of Afghanistan in 1995. They actually had a few fighter planes, and they used one to force a Russian cargo plane, a huge Ilyushin 1176 TD, carrying a company called Artisan, to land in Kandahar. And the Taliban held the Russian crew members prisoner for a year until one day they supposedly escaped and managed to take the plane with them. Now, how many millions of dollars that took to arrange, the Taliban have never said, but after the long, bloody decade of the 80s, throwing off Soviet occupation, squeezing the Russians for money like that remains a source of amusement to them. But this has been going on a long time, but we can see over and over again the way the Democrats, the way the left, misuse the free press. Not that it's free anymore, but they misuse the press pushing just blatant lies and propaganda. They just jump on. And the thing is that they are, you know, they were trying to say, well, Black Lives Matter is a loosely organized organization, and Antifa is a loosely organized. There is no center. Bull crap. It's all controlled. It's all controlled in that way. And the same way, the Democrats, when they play this game in the media, and all of a sudden every media outlet, every anchor, and every Democrat is using the same line. The same line, you know, we've seen it 100 times. Oh, it's just terrible. No, it's just terrible. And speaking of terrible fascism, there's another reason to go to Parler, okay? Because Facebook is Facebook's got a new policy which is going to annihilate citizen journalism. See, I'm not really a journalist. I share information that everybody else is doing, but try to put it together in a certain way. And the indie websites in favor, and Endemedia, big winners. And Pam Geller said that Facebook does not seem to understand that they are who they are, became what they are because of the freedom of the individual. It was because we could freely share without censorship or control that a lot of us gravitated to Facebook in the early 2000s. It's a betrayal of every Facebook user because a handful of cowardly, craven corporations. And from Audrey Coughlin of Fox Business wrote that Facebook is changing the way it prioritizes news stories and users' news feeds, a company spokesman confirmed to Fox Business on Tuesday. Now, Fox Business Susan Lee says that Clorox Company, along with other companies, are pausing advertisements on Facebook in an effort to target the social media platform for reported hate speech. Well, where have they been with all the people calling death to Jews on Facebook? I mean, I've been suspended from Facebook, but I know a lot of these hate pages, Nazis and Islamo-terrorists, and you know, that are threatening people. They got guns and whatever they're doing. They stay on. Now, the move comes as the tech giant faces scrutiny for not taking enough action against users who incite high hate and violence on the platform and for not amplifying highly original reporting. Now, Facebook's going to use artificial intelligence technology to identify and promote original reporting by identifying which outlets are cited most often as the original source of a story. Additionally, the company aims to demote stories that come from outlets who do not include accessible information about the publisher's editorial staff. So, in other words, if I'm on Facebook and I write a diatribe about an issue, and I use a article from the Washington Examiner, just, you know, in the post, I guess they're going to try to kind of silence what I'm doing, or they claim that, you know, friends will still see your stuff. But it's so funny that they say this, that people on both sides of the political spectrum have criticized Facebook for its content moderation policies, which have changed in recent weeks. Now, left-leaning users argue that the company promotes alt-right voices and hate speech from the right, of course. Because, you know, don't you know that, you know, all the violence the last few weeks has all been white supremacists doing it, you know, dressed up like Antifa and Black Lives Matter soldiers, right? And then the right-leaning users argue that the platform's algorithms stifle conservative voices. And we know we've been thrown off. I mean, I've been thrown off for just posting somebody else's story. So it's another reason to go to Parler. That's all. It's just another reason. But, you know, the one thing that doesn't seem to go away that's getting really frustrating is COVID-19. You know, COVID-19 is a marketing term. Obviously, they took them a long time to come up with that COVID-19 term to use. You know, it rings really well in the media and on posters and, you know, in ads and on the internet. But one of the most absurd stories I've read, because, you know, the COVID, the spikes are coming again. That's what they say. They're claiming there's spikes. See, this is something that Facebook, they'll want to censor me from saying, because I'm not a doctor, and, you know, I don't care about science. I pray to a crystal ball and a boogeyman. And the COVID-19, these spikes, you know, It's incredible to me that these spikes happened in cities, you know, Miami, Houston, and different places after these riots. You know, that the riots and the marches are just ignored as a possible source of the spread, especially when you have tens of thousands of people crammed into an avenue, a boulevard in some city. It's just ridiculous. Now, the Associated Press, or maybe it's the Associated Depressed, as I thought Levin's called it once in a while, they actually put out a story that everybody pushed around. Because, you know, that's what happens. You know, AP puts something out on the wire, and then, you know, every outlet in the universe goes and just copies it. It says, little evidence protests fueled increase of the coronavirus cases in the U.S. public, in the U.S., public health experts say. And the Associated Press said that there is little evidence that the protests that erupted after George Floyd's death caused a significant increase in the U.S. coronavirus infections. According to, and I love that, the public health experts, like they don't even have a name on it. Anyway, it says, if the protests had driven an explosion in cases, experts say, the jumps would have started to become apparent within 2 weeks and perhaps as early as 5 days. But that didn't happen in many cities with the largest protests, including New York, Chicago, Minneapolis, and Washington. Well, not yet anyway. Now, it's what's considered the first systematic look at the question. A team of economists that they were with the public health experts, determined that only 1 in 13 cities involved in the earliest wave of protests after Memorial Day had an increase that would fit the pattern. It was Phoenix, where the experts say cases and hospitalizations surged after a decision by Governor Doug Ducey to end Arizona's stay-at-home order on May 15th and ease restrictions on businesses. Arizona residents who were cooped up for 6 weeks, flooded Phoenix area bar districts, ignoring, so of course it's the people going to the bars. Forget the fact that the entire Democrat Party is drunk, probably by noon every day. But, you know, people are ignoring social distancing, and there was a lot of that going on. I mean, you know, people are going to be people. People have to take responsibility for what they believe is right. And this whole idea that you're going to go out and murder people, you know, the death rate's been dropping. The hospitalization rate's been dropping. And somebody that I listen to quite a bit, Dr. David Samadi, I know you see him on Newsmax, and, you know, hopefully he can get a little bit more, you know, time to talk there on Fox, because he considers himself the antidote to Dr. Fauci. And he pointed out that ICU beds are usually kept at 95% full in most hospitals because they are most profitable beds in the hospital. Hospitals get more money if they keep the ICU full. Now, in Texas, only 37% of the ICU cases are COVID-19 related. And he warns not to fall for the media using the 95% number. And the nation should not put their faith in one doctor alone. There is so much intelligence and brain power in the United States, and America needs a second opinion. So I'm suggesting you guys go take a look at Samadi, S-S-A-M-A-D-I, Dr. David Samadi. And I post him regularly on my Facebook, Felwyn World Group, Twitter, Instagram, Parler. And, you know, I still post there on Twitter. I'm just waiting for them to throw me out. But, you know, one really embarrassing story about the face masks that I felt really bad about, that I thought was a really sad story, was there was a military veteran got refused service for not wearing a face mask despite his disabilities. And one of his disabilities is he has no ears. The other disability his Humvee was blown up by an IED, and he was totally engulfed in flames, and he was burned and, you know, maimed up really bad. But a major military base refused service to one veteran unable to wear a face mask covering during the coronavirus contagion, leaving the man to say he wished he could, but many wounded soldiers simply cannot endure the covering. Trust us, he said, quote, if we could, we would wear a mask. Unfortunately, some of us can't, said the retired service member Israel De Toro. I don't have ears, so I can't wear them. But also, we can't breathe. For them to say, sorry, you can't come in, that sucks. Now, the base released a statement saying, we empathize with Master Sergeant Del Toro, and we're sorry that he was refused service. But it's, you know, it's going over the top. This COVID thing was terrible. We have 125,000 people that have died from it. You know, but I'm still trying to get a number on who died from the flu this year and who died from all the natural causes, because a lot of the people that died that are being called COVID deaths were, and it's funny how months have gone by and we keep saying the same thing, but it's just like we run by it. It's like the positive tests that have come. A great deal of those positive tests are people that are not sick. Now, can they spread it? No one's proven one way or the other that you can just because you have the COVID antibody in you, that you're going to spread this disease at all. There's no proof. That hasn't been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. Not at all. And, you know, it's just been so over the top. We've been locked down for too long, much too long. And, you know, it's taken its toll itself on people. It's taken its toll itself. Now, fortunately, the job report was phenomenal, 4.8 million jobs in June, bringing the unemployment down to 11%, a little over 11%. So it's coming down. That's coming down. COVID deaths are coming down. Hospitalizations went up in a couple of places because some of these people, like Herman Cain, I just heard Herman Cain tested positive. He had symptoms. Plus, he's 74 years old. You know, those are the people that need, you know, people like myself, I'm a senior citizen. People need to, you know, make sure that they're taking responsibility for themselves, because we need to take our rights back. You know, we've got a lot of crap going on in the street. We've got a lot of threats going on. But, you know, we've definitely got to take our rights back. I mean, these guys are getting a little too comfortable. Just tonight you can't go out. Tomorrow you can't go to your restaurant. Wednesday, you can go to the gym. But Thursday, you can't, you know, you can't. I mean, it's insane. This is insane. That's not the Constitution at all. But, you know, we're facing a pretty big mess right now. And I was thinking back, with all the rioting and the violence and the racism and the hate and the threats, the Marxism, the Islamists, out in the street, in our government, in our country, in our colleges, in our high schools. But I was thinking back in the 70s, because I was in high school in the 70s, and there was a lot of racial strife in the 70s. There was a lot of, you know, race fights going on between groups. People would be fighting with each other. And there was a lot of that violence, and there was the same, what I see Black Lives Matter doing, the same nationalism, the same Marxist nationalism with the Black Power fist sign and carrying rifles and machine guns. You know, that was the whole thing. That was what the Black Panthers were all about. And so a lot of the kids in school were emulating that. A lot of us were just hippies partying away, you know, looking for girlfriends. But there was a lot of people that were really politically bent and very violent and very angry. You know, I was there right there when, a couple of years after the busing had started, when they were integrating neighborhoods. And there was a lot of strife back then, and I thought we paid a bitter price in the 70s, the early 70s, to come out of it in a better place. You know, in a better place. My parents raised me not to be a racist, to not judge people at all on how they look, on their situation, on their economic level. You don't judge people that way. That's immoral. That's unethical. We raised our kids. All of our sons, my wife and I, all of our sons, heroes, were not white. You know, for the most part, just absolutely not white. You know, and I was remembering how we went through this. We've been through this before. But only some of us in our 60s will remember that, or 60s or 70s are going to remember any of that. But we were there. We were there during the race riots. In schools in 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, you know? And, you know, I see it here again. That's why I think I understand it. But our culture is being rocked, you know, not just with monuments coming down, but the last few years, you know, we conservatives, you know, it's funny. If you support the Constitution, you're some kind of a radical nut job all of a sudden. You know, the Constitution used to be in the middle, and you had right and left. Left wanted these things to be a little different, and right wanted these things to be a little different, and the Constitution was kind of down the middle. Everyone was equal, equal justice under the law. There were a lot of amendments made to make sure that that would be true. There's an equal opportunity. You know, you can't have equal outcomes. People got to forget that crap. But then you see the effect on the culture. And one of the effects is the scholar was forced to resign over a study that found that police shootings are not biased against blacks. And, you know, the Maoist Stalinist left. And, you know, Pam Geller said that the war is on truth, free thought, individualism, Americanism. American taxpayers should not be funding their own demise. No more funds for universities. Now, a scholar is forced to resign over a study that found the shootings are not biased. And Brittany Slaughter from Liberty University, College Fix, she wrote this article, and she said that Michigan State University leaders have successfully pressured Stephen Chu, S-H-U, to resign from his position as vice president of research. So he's not white, so he didn't have like a, you know, skin in the game per se, excuse the pun. But he's vice president of research and innovation at the Graduate Employees Union, launched a campaign to oust him from his role. This came after the union, which represents teaching and research assistants, crawled through years of blog posts and interviews Hsu has conducted and criticized him for sharing content on genetic differences among different races. But the main thrust to oust Hsu came because the professor touted Michigan State research that found police are not more likely to shoot African Americans. Quote, the victory of the Twitter mob will likely have a chilling effect on academic freedom on campus, Hsu told the College Fix via email. The union has taken advantage of the Black Lives Matter linked shutdown STEM day on June 10th to help oust him. Hsu stepped down from his vice president's role on June 19th after pressure from the union and the president of the university, Samuel Stanley. Hsu will stay on as a physics professor. So the union also circulated a petition against him, accusing him of scientific racism that garnered over 800 signatures, an open letter signed by more than 500 faculty and staff at Michigan argue that Hsu supports the idea that intelligence is linked to genetics. A counter petition in support of Hsu has gained more than 1,000 signatures, including many fellow professors. And to remove Hsu for holding controversial views or for inquiring about controversial topics, or for simply talking to controversial personalities would also set a dangerous precedent, inconsistent with the fundamental principles of modern, enlightened higher education, it read. But now today's media, right? The media doesn't do any research, and they certainly don't peddle in facts. Okay? And then, you know, that's one impact. Here's another impact. The NFL is planning to play the song known as the Black National Anthem before game all week one games. And according to reports on ESPN, the undefeated USA Today and AP citing sources close to the matter. The National Football League is planning, and it's kind of a nice idea on one hand, the National Football League is planning to play the song Lift Every Voice and Sing, also known as the Black National Anthem, before every game during a week of the season. And I don't really see a big problem with that. But, it, you know, it's if it was going to be done out of some real positive idea of equal justice and racial justice and togetherness as a country would be one thing. But this is in place of the national anthem. This is in criticism of America, and I think the criticism is going over the top. But big corporations, businesses like NFL, are running scared. How about this? Republican senators introduced legislation to cancel Columbus Day. This was reported on the I'm getting my information from the Daily Caller, Henry Rogers. Two Republican senators introduced an amendment Wednesday to get rid of Columbus Day and make Juneteenth a new federal holiday. Now, Republican Wisconsin Senators Ron John, if this didn't smell so much like virtue signaling, like pandering to me, all of this, it wouldn't bother me as much. But we're not just facing a civil rights revolt in the streets. This isn't just a civil rights revolt. Okay, this is a Marxist Islamist driven European socialist and American Democrat financed overthrow of our culture, civil war on our culture, and it's going to become a civil war if people don't wake up and we don't get a handle on this. Okay, because then there's people like this, and this is sick. A Washington Post opinion editor says, white women are lucky we are not calling for revenge. So just when you thought the left couldn't get any more vindictive and vile over hurt feelings, they just keep pouring it on. The Washington Post global opinions editor, Karen Attia, A-T-T-I-A-H, at Washington Post Global Opinions, wrote Sunday, white women are lucky that we are not calling for revenge, making her statement in a subsequently deleted social media post, according to friends at Breitbart. As you can see from her tweet feed, she's a real piece of work. She wrote, but here's the real thing about Karen memes. The dark side to handwriting about how Karen hurts white women's feelings is that it's a distraction from how everyday white women uphold white supremacy through violence, aggression, and weaponizing of their gender. What? I mean, these are blatant threats, and these things are being accepted, and they're just being, you know, pishad. I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. And this is the Washington Post. Oh, that's right. Bezos owns that. You know, Amazon, we got to find a replacement for Amazon because Amazon's out of control. They're a monopoly, and they're putting a lot of money into this revolution. A lot. You know, Bezos bought the Washington Post. You know, he saved it. He saved it. It was a crummy paper. It was going out of business. And, it was going down, and he saves it, and he's using it as a platform, I guess, for his political opinions. And then, you know, this report comes out where Black Lives Matter protest turns anti-Semitic, and they start shouting anti-Jewish chants. And this was reported on Atlas Shrugged. And it says, no surprises, the BLM charter is viciously anti-Jewish, which it is, if you've read it. Now, American Jewish leadership has been silent on the Black Lives Matter anti-Semitism because they're leftists. A lot of them are leftists. Not all of them. There's a lot of Jews out here. We're not. You know, America was the place that our people, both sets of my grandparents came here front running from the battle between the socialists and the communists going on in Eastern Russia and Eastern Europe. And there was nowhere else to go. There still is nowhere else to go. That's why we have to fight hard. That's why we should be celebrating the 4th of July in 2 days. And leftism is their religion, and leftism is anti-Semitic. Because with the rays of National Socialism, with the rays of this kind of Marxism, comes the anti-Semitism, comes right with them. I mean, Jews have been beaten up the last 4 years, 5 years. Assaults on Jews is the number one hate crime in America. You know, not against gays, not against African Americans, not against, you know, anybody else. It's the Jews. And Richard Sherman here describes the Black Lives Matter Charter. And it says, it could have been written by Hamas, whose charter in Article 7 mandates the murder of every Jew on earth, and it sounds like Mein Kampf. It declares that the Jewish people of Israel perpetrate genocide against Palestinian Arabs and that Israel is an apartheid state. That same BLM platform supports Omar Barghouti's anti-Semitic genocidal BDS movement, boycott, divestiture, and sanction movement against Jews in Israel. Now, Barghouti, the co-founder of BDS, has said the sole purpose of BDS is the euthanasia of the Zionist dream of Israel. It's open to interpretation. Isn't that what that schmuck said from BLM, Martha McCallum show? Now, a student of history, Barghouti knows full well that the Nazi T4 euthanasia program was the foundation of the final solution of the Jews as enacted by the Wannsee Protocol in January 1942. Bar Gowdy, use of the word euthanasia leaves no doubt he co-founded BDS to continue the anti-Semitic elimination mission formalized by Reinhard Heydrich and Adolf Eichmann in the Wannsee Conference. You know, and these protesters on Wednesday marched in the Lincoln Memorial to the Capitol building in a demonstration intended to tie the cause of Black Lives Matter to the boycott, sanctions, and divestment movement against Israel, boycott the Jews. The march, led by Harvard University rising senior Christian Tabash, attracted about 200 people who carried signs with messages either supporting the Palestinian Liberation Organization or Black Lives Matter. The event, although independently organized, was held in tandem with a series of days of rage demonstrations against Israel's territorial claims to the West Bank. As the march progressed, Tabash led his followers in alternating chants about Israel and racial justice. Quote, Israel, we know you. You murdered children too, the crowd chanted at one point. Israel, we know you. Okay. The crowd immediately followed the chant with alternating rally cries of Black Lives Matter and Palestinian Lives Matter. Many more shouted criticism of Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. That was somebody that Barack Obama didn't like very much either, did he? Now, a woman waved a sign on one side, bore the Palestinian flag, and on the other, the phrase Black Lives Matter. Tabash also led the group in the reading of poetry detailing the crimes of Israel against Palestinian Muslims. One poem titled Mr. War decried the Israeli government. Curse thee, the corruptors of Zion. F this occupation. The poem later referred to the Jewish state as a puppet master of continents, a reference to a centuries-old conspiracy that Jewish people secretly rule the world. Right out of Mein Kampf, right out of the Nazis. So that's what we're dealing with here. We are dealing with a Marxist Islamist movement, okay, that's coming for blood. They're not coming just for reparations. If anything, they want to take your property, take your house away. If you were white at all, and both sets of my grandparents came here after 1900. So if you look at the facts, I don't know anything for reparations because my extended family back that came from Europe and Russia, they weren't here for all that. Okay, they weren't part of any of that. You know, the 1% of slave-owning landowners in America at that time, 1%. You know, the other 99% of American citizens in the 1800s were not slave owners. And some of those slave owners were not white. And the other thing is that the Republican Party was founded to end slavery. And hundreds of thousands of people died fighting to end slavery. And died on the other side as well. It was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people died over that war. You know, but this doesn't end. Now, you know, they were doing a lot of their rioting in the cities, but now they've headed out to the suburbs and the wealthy suburbs. And it was reported in page 6 of the Post that pitchfork-wielding protesters descend on wealthy Hamptons estates. And a caravan of protesters, some wielding plastic pitchforks, some with real ones, descended on, not that a plastic one couldn't hurt somebody, but they descended on the Hamptons Wednesday to blast the rich and decry the nation's rising income inequality. More than 100 drivers and about 200 marchers paid a visit to the homes of some of the world's wealthiest people, including ex-New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He was one of the people that made, see, whatever Trump raises in funds every month, Bloomberg's going to throw in enough money that the Democrats raised more, okay? You heard about the fundraising records that were set. Well, Trump set a record for fundraising in the month, and the Democrats just happened to do one better. Now, they were saying, tax the rich, not the poor, the protesters chanted outside Bloomberg's $20 million Southampton mansion. And some called the failing presidential candidate a looter. he's a looter. We already saw the looters in New York. They went into Macy's. Now, protesters, several of whom came in from the Big Apple, demanded that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo raise taxes on the state's 118 billionaires to make up for the steep revenue shortfall amid the coronavirus pandemic. The group is taking issue with Cuomo's pitch to cut 20% in state funding from schools, hospitals, and housing agencies. They noted that while the virus outbreak has deeply impacted low-income people and communities of color, the wealth of the U.S. billionaires has surged. But the one good thing about this okay? Is everybody's going to see what the truth is. And it's good to see them going after these Democrats that have mismanaged so many states and so many cities for so long. In fact, your greatest poverty, you know, for the most part, is in those areas. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, what is all this about? You know, they're talking about poverty, lack of equality. So I wanted to look at the poverty rate. And, you know, first of all, you know, they've divided us into these groups. The government had a lot to do with it. You know, the Democrats were always racists. Oh, and by the way, I just wanted to point out that today, there's two birthdays I want to talk about real quick. Today was the birthday of Thurgood Marshall. He became the first African-American Supreme Court justice in 1967. Excuse me, 67. I'm near choking. I don't have COVID, I swear. But today was his birthday, and Thurgood Marshall was a great thinker, a great judge. It wasn't just that he was black. He was intelligent, well-spoken, well-written, and he understood the Constitution. Unlike some of the hacks we have on the, I hate to say it, but some of the hacks on the Supreme Court right now. But Medgar Evers, you know, one of the greats, also was born on this day, Medgar Evers, Medgar Iowa Evers, and he was an American civil rights activist in Mississippi, the state field secretary for the NAACP and a World War II vet who had served the United States Army. He worked to overturn segregation at the University of Mississippi and the segregation of public facilities and expand opportunities for African Americans, which included the enforcement of voting rights. Damn. He was assassinated. He was assassinated by a Democrat named Byron De La Beckwith, who was a, you know, who was a member of a white supremacist group, and yeah, I lost my space, lost my place here. The White Citizens Council was founded in 1954 following the United States Supreme Court's ruling that de jure public school segregation was unconstitutional. Begun in Mississippi, chapters arose in towns across the South among whites who wanted to resist integration. Their members used a variety of economic tactics to suppress black activism and sustain segregation. The councils applied severe pressure by boycotting black businesses. Boycotting businesses, who does that? Denying loans and credit to Democrats and Black Lives Matter. Anyway, and the Palestinians. Denying loans and credit to African Americans, firing people from their jobs and other means. That sounds familiar too. In Mississippi, they prevented school integration until 1964. Although similar in nature to the Ku Klux Klan, the White Citizens Council was perceived to be less disputable body than the KKK because it lacked the historical reputation as a violent organization. Medgar Evers' first work for the NAACP on national level involved interviewing Mississippians who have been intimidated by White Citizens Council and preparing affidavits for use as evidence against the councils if necessary. De La Beckwith was a member of the White Citizens Council and the Ku Klux Klan, and he assassinated Medgar Evers. And he was a Democrat. In fact, the judge, the governor of Mississippi at the time, Ross Barnett, a Democrat, during the course of the trials about Medgar Evers' murder, actually walked up to Beckwith while he was sitting there and shook his hand, showing the solidarity, you know, from one brother to another. And these are the same Democrats, folks. I wish people wouldn't be deceived. Now, one of Trump's advisors, Carol Swain, she's warning of a global movement to destroy the United States. And she's a former CNS reports, Susan Jones at CNS reported that she's a former Vanderbilt professor and an advisory board member with the Black Voices for Trump. And she told Fox Wednesday night that the ultimate goal of the recent protests, vandalism and occupation, is the destruction of the U.S. It's not about police brutality or racism, Swain said. I would say that it's part of a global movement to destroy the United States as we know it. And its roots are in Marxism, And anyone that studies Marxism knows where it goes. It goes to communism, and that's where we are headed. So the activists that you see out there today, this is her talking, they have an agenda. They're very well organized. The uprisings are not spontaneous. The grievances of black people and others that are oppressed are being used to advance an agenda. And if they succeed in destroying America, I guarantee you no one will be happy with the nation that remains. Asked about the toppling of the statues and monuments in a recent New York Times examination of the carvings at Mount Rushmore and the Indian land on which it sits, Swain said our civilization and everything that's traditional is in the crosshairs of the socialist left. There is no monument, she said, there is no monument in America that's safe. In fact, I don't know if you guys heard, but they burnt a wood elk. There was a wooden elk statue, and they burned it down. They must be really, really not clear. But yes, they burnt an elk down. Now, on the same day Swain spoke, the mayor of Richmond, Virginia, using emergency powers, ordered the removal of several monuments in the city, including the statue of Confederate General Stonewall Jackson. A crowd gathered in the rain to watch Stonewall fall. Here's the reason the mayor, LeVar Stoney, gave for his emergency removal. Quote, this is Mayor LeVar Stoney, quote, as the COVID-19 pandemic continues to surge and protesters attempt to take down Confederate statues themselves or confront others who are doing so, the risk grows for serious illness, injury, or death. We have an urgent need to protect the public. Do you believe that? He took Stonewall Jackson down because of COVID-19. Now, Swain said, now you know it's all BS, right? Now, Swain said it's time for Americans to wake up because the agitators will never be satisfied. She said, quote, I think Black Lives Matter, a lot of organizations, a lot of companies, they are endorsing that movement for protection because they feel if they don't, their windows will be broken out, their buildings will be burnt down. The police will not be there to protect anyone, so people are going along with them. And again, it will not end well because the more they get, the more they want, and no one is pushing back. It is very distressing that people are not pushing back. I see that connected with all the hysteria the Democrats are pushing and the coronavirus and making us all wear masks. It's all about destroying our way of life in America, and people need to wake up. So wake up. And it just continues. It really just continues. And it's so clear to me, you know. The other thing is these universities, you know, Victor Davis Hanson, you know, he's got some great ideas. He says universities are sowing the seeds of their own obsolescence. When mobs tore down the statue of Ulysses S. Grant and defaced it, and defaced a monument to African-American veterans in the Civil War, many people wondered whether the protesters had ever learned anything in high school or college, Victor Davis Hanson said. Did any of these iconoclasts know the difference between Grant and Robert E. Lee? Could they recognize the name Gettysburg? Could they even identify the decade in which the Civil War was fought? Universities are certainly teaching our youth to be confident, loud, and self-righteous, but the media blitz during these last several weeks of protests, riots, and looting also revealed a generation that is poorly educated and yet petulant and self-assured without justification. Many of the young people on the televised front lines of the protests are in their 20s. Most of them appear juvenile, at least in comparison to their grandparents, survivors of the Great Depression and World War II. Now, how can so many so sheltered and prolonged adolescents claim to be all-knowing? Ask questions like these, and the answers ultimately lead back to the university. Millions of those who graduate from college or drop out do so in arrears. There are some $1.5 trillion in aggregate student debt in the United States. Such burdens sometimes delay marriage. They discourage child rearing. They make home ownership hard, along with all the other experiences we associate with the transition to adulthood. The universities, some with multi-billion dollar endowments, will accept no more responsibility. They are not overly worried that many of their indebted graduates discover their majors don't translate well into well-paying jobs or guarantee employers that grads can write, speak, or think cognitively. One unintended consequence of the chaotic responses to COVID-19 epidemic and the violence that followed the police killing of George Floyd is a growing re-examination of the circumstances that birthed the mass protest. There would be far less college debt if higher education, rather than the federal government, guaranteed its own student loans, if universities backed loans with their endowments and infrastructure, college presidents could be slashing costs. They would ensure that graduates were more likely to get good-paying jobs thanks to rigorous coursework and faculty accountability. But, you know, that makes too much sense, right, folks? It's like a little too conservative. You know, they want to just tax and tax and just take other people's money, you know? Now, Brent Bozell he's with MRC, but he wrote here in CNS that the Black Lives Matter, that rallying cry is now endorsed by millions of people, not just in the United States, but around the world. By a 28% margin, Civics finds that a majority of American voters support the movement, according to the New York Times. Well, my guess is that 99% of those supporters of this group have no idea what it stands for. All you shopkeepers putting signs in your stores, you school teachers programming your students to lock arms, you men and women in the cloth preaching about morality, you civic leaders urging community action, and political leaders demanding legislative remedies. You give ignorant pawns a bad rap. Black Lives Matter was founded by radical extremists who are perfectly pleased with the rioting, looting, vandalism, and violence that they have plunged our cities into for the past several weeks. It's what violent revolutionaries do. You know, I mean, they call themselves, you know, trained Marxists, right? Co-founder Patrice Cullors told Cosmo that Asita Shakur is one of the leaders who inspired her. Shakur's real name is Joanne Chesimard, and she is wanted by the FBI as a domestic terrorist for murdering a police officer, escaping prison and hiding out in Cuba for the last bunch of decades. One of the board of directors for the leftist group Thousand Currents, which handles donations to Black Lives Matter, is a convicted terrorist who was pardoned by Bill Clinton. You know, it's incredible. But Bozell says, sorry, you spoiled, white, privileged, nameless, faceless, cowardly fools. BLM supports the destruction of America, and you've endorsed it. And they're laughing at you. Greater New York Black Lives Matter President Hawk Newsom warned that if, quote, this country doesn't give us what we want, then we will burn down the system and replace it. He claimed it a matter of interpretation, whether he was speaking figuratively or literally, kind of a threat, right? And there's, you know, and the other thing that this myth of vandalism, this myth of righteous vandalism, you know, historians should not be supporting this takedown of our history, because we need to see where we came from. We need to see the mistakes we made. We need to see it in the spot where it happened, whether it was the Battle of Gettysburg or whether it was Harriet Tubman running people on the train and you know, the railroad, the free slave, when they were running people up the railroad to the north to get away from their slave masters. You know, these are all statues. This is all history of America. And the Republicans were the ones fighting for it, you know. But this is frightening, and people need to stand up right now, because it's not, this isn't good. Now, you know, Sora Kern at Gatestone said that Black Lives Matter is a Marxist revolutionary movement aimed at transforming the United States into a communist dystopia. Black Lives Matter states that it wants to abolish the nuclear family, police, prisons, and capitalism. BLM lead, and it reminds me so much of the same propaganda I was being fed in the 70s. It's the same. It's the same Marxist Islamist nationalism from the 70s. Now, the BLM leaders have threatened to burn down the system if their demands are not met. They're training. They're also training militias right now all over the country. Now, cutting the LAPD budget means longer response to 9/11 emergency calls. Officers calling for backup won't get it, and rape, murder, and assault investigations won't occur or will take forever to initiate, let alone complete. And that was from Los Angeles Peace Protective League, the city's police union. Also, white people are so confused in America. If there is systematic racism today, it's a racism against white people, in the sense that white people are told that they are responsible for all the evils of the world. That was, and Carol Swain also said, we are all human beings in God's image. Black Lives Matter and Antifa and organizations like that will not help us transcend racism and classism and the isms that are they're all concerned with. They are things that can be done in the black community. But the most important thing is helping people realize how important their own attitudes are. You know, and, you know, one of the claims is police use of force. And John Perrazzo wrote for Front Page, he wrote that a major Bureau of Justice Statistics report in 2001 examined the incidents where police in the United States used deadly force to kill criminal suspects between 1976 and 1998. During the 23-year span, 42% of all suspects killed by police were black, a figure that comported precisely with the percentage of violent crimes committed by African Americans during that same period. This is enormously significant because we would expect that in police forces not plagued by systematic racism, officers would shoot suspects of various racial or ethnic backgrounds at rates closely resembling their respective involvement in the types of serious crimes most likely to elicit the use of force by police. And indeed, that is exactly what the evidence shows. Ironically enough, right? And the same BSS report found that nearly two-thirds of all justifiable homicides by police during the 76 to 98, the officer's race and the suspect's race were the same. When a white or Hispanic officer killed a suspect, that suspect was usually 63% of the time white or Hispanic. And when a black officer killed a suspect, that suspect was usually black 81% of the time. Now, the BJS report also examined the rate at which officers killed suspects in other racial or ethnic backgrounds. In 1998, the black officer kills black felon rate was 32 per 100,000 black officers, more than double the rate at which white and Hispanic officers killed black felons. That same year, the rate at which white and Hispanic officers killed white or Hispanic felons, 28 per 100,000, was much higher than the black officer kills white or Hispanic felon rate of 11 per 100,000. And I know the statistics get boring, but those facts, those are the facts. Those are numbers that you can really depend on. You know, you can really depend on. But, you know, this is a frightening move that's going on here. We're going to have no 4th of July fireworks. Baseball still hasn't started yet. We have no live music concerts, outdoor concerts, stadium concerts. Everything's shut down because of this COVID. While they allow these people to riot in the streets. I mean, I don't know how anybody could vote Democrat ever again after what we've seen the Democrats do. They have stood by, and really, the Republican leadership is nauseating, okay? McConnell comes out months later with a comment. You know, I mean, it's a joke. It's a real joke, you know, and they're so scared. See, whether McConnell gets elected or not, he should be doing the right thing. Now, the Democrats are never going to do the right thing because all they care about is getting elected. So they are going to lie. They're going to cheat. They're going to steal. They're going to do whatever they can. They could do anything they can, okay, to win. You know, they're going to lie about people. They're going to lie about things. They're going to support stuff. You know, they think at the end of all this, they're going to be able to control this monster that they've helped unleash, that Obama has helped unleash, that Soros has helped unleash on America. And we, the people, haven't stood up yet. I don't know if you saw the pregnant woman. These black people blocked these people's van from leaving a parking lot. The white woman was in the car pregnant. They started making threats and saying all this nasty stuff, and this woman jumped out. She did jump out with a pistol and told them to back off to get away from the car so they could leave. Now, they're getting indicted now for for terroristic threats. But, you know, seriously, we've been put into a situation where none of us know what's going to happen. We think the police are not going to be there to help us. We think there are people out there that are going to be, at any given moment, you know, if I have the wrong color shirt on or the wrong hat on, somebody could go beat me up. If I have my yarmulke on and I'm walking down the street, they may just pound me down because, you know, I'm, you know, somehow part of the evil in the world. And so people are scared. They've made people very, very scared, you know, and hopefully this cultural civil war will calm down. And we'll be able to really, you know, legislate this the right way, the way you do it in peaceful society, the way you do it in America. You legislate. Hey, you've been listening to Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irvin, your host here, thanking you for tuning in. And just remember, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.
That's your world. I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, I want to thank you for listening to the July 2nd, 2020 podcast of Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irvin, your host, here, thanking you for tuning in. I really appreciate the support. And just remember, as hard as it gets, as crazy as it gets, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.